Welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. I'm Jack Smundlehurst. On today's pod, we're going to look at Cambridge's recent form and the fact that we're still top of the league. A look ahead to a tricky rest of February and March and the much disputed return of Liam O'Neill. Joining me today are Jordan Morland. Hello.
Afternoon, all.
Tom Walker, hello.
Good afternoon.
And finally, Owen Kiernan.
Good afternoon.
So, a bumper pod for you today. Plenty to get our teeth into. And, yesterday Cambridge travelled to Mansfield and came away with a slightly unexpected 3-0 victory. What impressed you most yesterday, Jordan Warland?
Lovely afternoon, wasn't it? I think it's good to say that on 52 points, we're probably safe from relegation this season. So, big thumbs up there. It was a slow start to the first half yesterday, wasn't it? And we sort of grew into the game. And I don't know, at half time, I wasn't entirely sure which way it would go. I kind of thought we'd probably edge it and that Mansfield would tire and we would see the results of them playing three games in 7 days. But I didn't think, or I didn't predict, that we would go on to be as dominant in the second half and win by three goals. And it's crazy, isn't it? Because our history at Mansfield is really poor, but the last two seasons we've picked up really incredible sort of thrashings of Mansfield at their place. So yeah, that was good. I can't underestimate how good that result was, not only because it was on like a really tough pitch, but kind of the message that it sends to the rest of the league, because we've just beaten one of the form teams over the last sort of couple of months since Clough's taken over there. I guess the biggest takeaway for me was that the performance showed how important it was sort of having a break from midweek. Well, having a break from the midweek game, having more recovery time, having more time on the training pitch. And you could really see that in how we played against Mansfield yesterday. So, yeah, I think the biggest sort of thing that impressed me, or the biggest thing that I've taken away from that, is that I've got this more confidence for the rest of the run-in from sort of mid-March to the end of the season, based on seeing how well we dealt with having that sort of break. Like, we're about to go into the final sort of busy period of the season where we play, I think it's 3 weeks where we've got midweek games. But then after that, whereas others in and around us have got to play more midweek games, we don't. We're going to go from, I mean, with the exception of the Easter games, we go sort of mid-March to the end of the season just playing Saturday. So hopefully we're going to start seeing the repercussions of us playing more games than everyone else. And hopefully we're going to start seeing other teams maybe dropping points because of that sort of fixture congestion and playing more games and more tired legs. So yeah, that was my sort of biggest takeaway from yesterday, how important it was to have that break, and it kind of sort of justifies all the work that went into getting the Southend game on, I guess.
Yeah, amazing to see as well. Paul Mullen netting a couple more goals, and yeah, fast becoming one of Cambridge's most prolific strikers in a season. Incredible stuff from him once again, and Harvey Nibbs getting on the goal, getting on the score sheet as well. And another clean sheet, three clean sheets in four games, Owen. How important is the defence for Cambridge and those new players that they brought in? How are they going to help us for the rest of the season?
Yeah, it was a really big blow, wasn't it? Losing Darling and losing Cundy within that kind of short period of time. And I think that the club kind of did really well to identify that and bring in players. Adji Elise, we haven't really seen enough of to kind of pass any judgment on, really, so it'd be unfair to discuss him too much. Drysdale hasn't played in central defence, but he looks capable enough in central midfield, and that leaves off Kadena, who seems to be Bonner's kind of first choice there in the centre back position alongside Greg. So he's had a mixed start. His first couple of games were pretty good. He looked really kind of quite composed on the ball. He looked really not solid, but you know, he looked like he knew what he was doing. Wasn't really caught out of position too much. And then he had that game against Salford where just nothing went right for him, and he made a huge mistake that led to their first goal, and just didn't really recover from that, did he? ended up kind of coming off in the second half. And I was listening to Mark Bonner's comments yesterday after the game, and he was saying that Okadina had held his hands up to that, and you know, admitted he makes a mistake. You know, players make mistakes. It happens in any league. You know, if you watched the Liverpool Man City game the other week, you know, some of the best highly paid players in the world making huge mistakes. So you know, for a guy that's played or had played at the time like three first team kind of professional appearances to make a mistake against, you know, let's not forget Salford are a good side. You know, they're an expensively assembled side. It was a real baptism of fire for him, wasn't it? So yeah, he's done okay. You know, he's recovered since. I think it was important that he played against Southend. It was even more important that he kept a clean sheet there. And again, yesterday looked like quite a decent player.
Yeah, the only point I was going to add there to the Okadina chat was, I don't know if mistake is fully the right word to say. I guess it was a mistake, but like part of me feels that's a little bit harsh because the two sort of incidents that happened were incidents where he actually got to the ball first. So he was showing sort of signs of quality, but what happened was he just kind of got a bit of a reality check. He got outmaneuvered physically by quite a strong, experienced striker. And I guess it's just a learning curve for him finding his way and finding the difference between under 23s football and sort of League Two football. But I've been really surprised by how well Okadina has done since he came in. Thought he was really composed in his debut against Crawley. And, you know, when we signed the free centre-backs after Cundy and Darling departed, it wasn't obvious of the three who was going to be the main starter, who was going to be the first choice. I had a feeling that Okadina would probably be the last choice of the three. I thought the other two might have come in ahead of him. So, yeah, surprised to see him sort of lock down that sort of starting position, but he has done really well. He did well again yesterday against Mansfield. And it's interesting that we talk about the three defenders coming in and having an impact. I think the biggest defender having an impact for us at the moment is Greg Taylor, who is undoubtedly in the form of his life. He was terrific against Mansfield yesterday. That cross that led to the Wesley chance in the first half was brilliant as well. And it's just a real testament that this so far this season, he's played alongside three different young centre-backs, and our defensive record has, for the most part, been incredible. You know, Salford is the only game where we've shipped in more than two goals that I can think of. So, big shout-out to Greg, proving Owen wrong that you might be able to get promoted with Greg Taylor as a starting centre-back.
Certainly interesting to see the kind of renaissance in Greg Taylor's career. And Joe got in contact and gave us a double-barrel question of the challenge Mark Bonner has of keeping three lone centre-backs happy when only one of them is going to play. How did he do that? And also, Tom, is Taylor plus one always the strongest centre-back option?
Yeah, it has to be. I think Jordan made a good point there that, you know, he seems to have kind of sort of almost mentored, I guess, or sort of coached younger centre-backs through games that have been alongside him. Obviously, I know, you know, Darling played a lot of games and obviously moved on. And, you know, Cundy, you know, obviously maybe, you know, probably a better example of that, of someone who maybe didn't have too much experience. But, you know, Greg got obviously helped him through that. And Okadina is another one who's obviously going to benefit from that. And it probably goes for the other two guys as well. So I think, and, you know, the fact that he's our captain as well. And, you know, you need to get on the team on merit. But, you know, against Mansfield, he's absolutely excellent. So I think he's because of the quality of the squad, you can't really say the first name on the team sheet because there's about seven people you've described like that. But I think he's an absolute must-have at centre-back. I certainly wouldn't fancy us going into games with sort of two of those three. I think experience does count for a lot. And I think as a team, without having the figures to hand, I would guess that we're probably younger than we are older across the pitch, if that makes sense. So I think having that experience is absolutely crucial. I think with regards to keeping them happy, it's tough to say really, because like they surely can't have come in and expected to have just walked into the team. Like, you know, with the centre backs, obviously there was a bit of an issue where, you know, one of them will walk into the team, but none of them have that sort of divine right to play. And, you know, we're like, it's good that in sort of years gone by, there were players who were keeping places and, like, why are they still playing, all that sort of stuff. But, like, at the moment, it's just going to take a lot for someone to be ousted from the team. You know, I know in an attacking sense, we were pretty poor against Southend, but we kept a clean sheet there. Obviously, kept a clean sheet against Mansfield. Like, I think the two guys behind Ocadena, as I guess it'll be for sort of immediate future at the moment, you can't really have too many complaints. And you know, there's one thing to be keeping them happy, but, like, you can't play everyone. And we're in a season where, you know, we're top of the league. Like, the players that are playing are performing to such a high bar that they just have no room to, like, sort of get annoyed about it. I think, if anything, it's just on them to just kind of raise the level of their game, and that's probably what Bonner will be saying to them as well. So I don't really foresee too many issues there, but certainly I think it'll be Greg plus one for the sort of foreseeable. And I think, based on performances recently, I think that deserves to be Ocadena, especially the way he's recovered since Salford, because it would have been very, very easy for a player of his sort of level of experience to, you know, drop his head and just, like, completely lose it. But the way he's bounced back has been really good. I think probably, like I say, it's kind of cemented that place for the time being, at least.
I think you're absolutely right. It's Taylor plus one, because otherwise you've got a very inexperienced front back two ahead of, don't forget, your second choice goalkeeper. So, yeah, it's got to be Taylor if he's fit. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because I guess Bonner has been quite clever here, because we were all wanting and expecting an experienced head to come in and see us through into that sort of run-in and hopefully get us over the line. But he's brought in three players of a very similar profile, and I guess that breeds competition. Like, all three of them would fancy their chances of getting in the squad. So I guess maybe you keep them happy by the fact that they are sort of competing. I wonder if the bigger question is keeping their parent club happy. Like, West Ham would have sent players here because they want them to play, ditto Spurs, and you know, and respectively, even Coventry. So I don't know what the situation would be about them being recalled and then sent on loan elsewhere, because I'm not 100% sure on what the loan rules are between now and the end of the season. But I wonder if one of the reasons Cundy moved was he wasn't playing as much for good periods of the season. And that's maybe why, you know, that's why I ended up being sort of moved to another club, because they were interested in him.
I think for the, you know, the players that have come in, it's, yeah, you're right. It's about keeping the parent clubs happy. But you know, let's take, you know, Ocadena seems to be the first choice of the three. Drysdale's had minutes, admittedly not in his favoured position. And, it, you know, it looks to be like Elise is going to be the one that probably misses out. But at the same time, he's coming into a dressing room with some experience in it, you know, in Taylor, in Houlihan, you know, in Mullin even, he's had, you know, quite a lot of league football. And he's coming into a dressing room that is top of the league and seems to be a good dressing room. It seems to be a very confident dressing room. And, you know, regardless of where Elise's future is, whether it is, you know, eventually at West Ham or whether it's lower down the pyramid, you know, it's probably only going to serve him well being in a winning dressing room as opposed to coming into a dressing room with a club that's getting thumped every week.
I think the thing with Elise as well is I'm pretty sure he's left-sided. So if you were to start him, you're probably looking at moving Greg to the other side, which he probably, well, doesn't make sense to do, does it? That keep Taylor in his best position while he's on form. I think Elise can also play left-back if it's needed. So there are, yeah, there's lots of reasons to say why signing him was a good call. And I actually thought that it would be him or Drysdale that would be the front runners for that starting position. Like, Drysdale's had plenty of games at Gillingham in the first half of the season. So I'm, you know, a little bit surprised that of the three, it's Ocadena that is so far sort of locked down that starting position. But I guess that's a testament to how well he's played. And like the lads have said, how well he's responded to a pretty miserable first half against Salford a few weeks ago. Is anyone disappointed that we didn't sign a more experienced centre-back when we perhaps had the chance before the window shut in January?
I think it's very easy to say now, you know, off the back of a 3-0 win at Mansfield, no, I'm not disappointed. I think at the end of the window, after the, you know, we obviously knew there were going to be a couple of people coming in, I'd be lying if I said I didn't want one of them to maybe be a bit more established. But now I look at it now and I think, I just don't think it would have been the right way to go about it, you know, to go and bring in sort of, I don't know, like a 32-year-old centre-back, like, for example, just like, it feels like this squad, it's so energetic that it maybe just needs a bit more like youth in the team. And I guess the sort of goal, if you like, because obviously it had gone well before Darlan and Kundi leaving, was just to end up in a situation where you basically kind of replace them. I don't think that necessarily, well, like, we're not seeing enough of any of them, I guess, to sort of make comparisons just yet. But, you know, Darlan was very, very good, and it obviously remains to be seen if these guys are exactly the same sort of ability. But they've obviously got some pedigree. Like, and I think, like I said, the obviously the aim at the sort of end of January was to, you know, at least come out no weaker than what we did going into it. And I think what we've got is basically two young centre backs that have left with good potential, and we've replaced them, not necessarily like for like, but I look at it now and I think it's probably not the worst thing in the world that we've done that and sort of gone for those two sort of profiles of players. Like you say, it kind of breeds direct competition, I guess, in a way, and maybe that's better than having like an Elliot Ward or something. You know, he was experienced, but he was rubbish. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, so yeah, I think it's fine. I don't think I'm that upset now. But like I say, it's obviously easy to say it now off the back of sort of two clean sheets, and you know, one at Southend and obviously one of the win at Mansfield. Maybe if you'd have asked me immediately after the Salford game, I might give you a different answer. But I think for the time being, it's not really too much of a worry of mine, should we say.
So when you're that kind of age and you're at a Premier League academy and you get loaned out to our level, I mean, it's pretty clear your future probably isn't at your parent club, is it? You know, I'd be very surprised if Elise goes on to be a West Ham's kind of, you know, centre-back for any real period of time. Likewise, Okadina's probably not going to play for Spurs first team. So it's like, you know, for me, it's good that we've got these players on loan and they're enjoying being here. And, you know, they're getting minutes because, you know, at some point they are going to be released by their parent club, and they're going to be looking for another club to go to. And if they're decent, and if they've got, you know, if they've got that pedigree of, you know, being trained up at Tottenham or being trained up at West Ham or wherever. Drysdale's a little bit different because Coventry are a little bit different. But it's, you know, it's good to have players in that have got youth team pedigree at a big team. And yeah, I don't really know the point I'm trying to make, but it's
Well, Noel went through the West Ham youth ranks, didn't he?
He did.
He's
yeah.
Now he's now rebuilt his sort of career in sort of in Leagues Two, and is now a real candidate to go to the Euros this summer. So I guess there is potential there for sort of under 23 players from Prem clubs to be thinking about, like, what do they do after, you know, if it doesn't work out at their home club.
Yeah, I guess it's as much as like the home club uses us to get minutes into them. It's also like we use them as trial players and try and convince them that, you know what, okay, you know, your career probably doesn't lie at Tottenham or West Ham. Come here. You enjoyed it here. You helped us get up. Now help us stay up. You'll be decent.
I got the impression that Bonner probably was after a more experienced central defender, just based on some of the things they were saying at the time, sort of what was going out to the press. But it looks like that didn't materialise, but it seems like good options. And shout out to Drysdale for starting so well, not in his natural position and playing in midfield. And also, he scores really highly for me on the Jack Swindlehurst scale of terrible haircuts. So it's good to have a player like that in.
Yeah, shout out to Declan for that. And it kind of triages quite nicely to the midfield for Cambridge. So there's been, you know, throughout the season, different combinations of players, and we've had injuries in there, and obviously a really important part of the pitch. So Connor O'Reilly, a regular contributor to the pod questions, asks, what's our view on Liam O'Neill, and does he deserve the hate he gets? Connor says he definitely doesn't. And on yesterday's performance, I think we can all agree that Liam O'Neill certainly can do a job. Tom, what's your opinion on Liam O'Neill?
Yeah, I think there's obviously a couple of things to say on it, and I think the first one is that some of the comments sort of directly to the sort of news that he was starting, the team news, were just like out of this world, like stupid. Like you're more than entitled to an opinion. Maybe some of these guys, this is unfortunately the case, but you know, some of the sort of, you know, not going to go into too much detail, but you know, people sort of suggesting that it would be nice if he was forced off the pitch, you know, early on, like these sorts of things. Like, it's, I'm trying to think of a way to sort of frame this that sort of makes sense, but the only way I can do it is, like, we are literally top of the league. Like, it literally could not be going better. Like, just trust Bonner. Like, I think he's earned that at least. And but like, I think on O'Neill, kind of more specifically, I think he's just fine. Like, I thought he played really, really well against Mansfield. And firstly, good to have him back, obviously, because it's been a long time, and him to kind of slot back into the team. I think it's the first time he's played for us since the opening day of the season, even. So for him to kind of slot back in and put in a performance like that, I didn't think it was the position that he played and the sort of role that he had within the team. You know, he's not going to be affecting the game going forward in the same way like Houlihan might, for example. But you know, he controlled, you know, moved the ball on nicely, sort of recycled it quite well, you know, broke up play where he needed to. I think that's just a good, solid performance. And I think the problem is, and it's probably not just restricted to our fans, is that everything has to be so sort of binary these days. It has to be like, he's either world class or he's rubbish. And it's like, I think sometimes that you need to bridge that middle ground, which is that we've got a League Two player here who is probably going to play well twice and then play badly the game after. That's why these guys are playing in League Two. But I think he's always been one that has received more stick than he's sort of than is fair, basically. And okay, like if he's played badly and people are getting on his back and people are really kind of picking him out, then you know, he's obviously not played well. But what frustrates me is when he's played probably for the last year, 18 months even. Like, I think when he's played, he's usually played quite well. But his big problem has been that he's not been able to get that sort of run of games, that sort of consistency within the team, whether it's injuries, suspensions, whatever it is. But I do think that when he's played, he's put in some decent performances. And I've got no issue with him playing at all. I think he's a good player. You know, I think we maybe can sort of write off the fact that he's got a real connection with the club, which I think, you know, you're looking at guys like Greg, Dunk, obviously Darling before he left, and Hannon now even as well, who sort of came through the system. Like, it's good to see these sort of homegrown guys with obviously a bit of an interest in the club. Like, saying yesterday, like the uproar when like Paul Lewis left, for example, like a bang average footballer, didn't really give a shit about the club. Like, let's be honest. I know that they have to earn their praise, have to earn their place in the team, but like, why do people get on this guy's back so much? I don't understand it. Like, how can you have such a deep affection for someone like Paul Lewis, for example? And I'm just picking him out as like the first person that springs to mind. But then when someone who's not played necessarily any better or worse than these guys, that as soon as their name comes up in the team sheet, you've got guys saying that they don't want to get injured after 20 minutes. Like, it's mental. Like, he's just an okay League Two footballer. And I think played well yesterday, and hopefully more the same.
Yeah, it's horrible, and it's not on, like, have an opinion and voice that opinion, but there's certain sort of levels, and yeah, same things. Like, I hope he gets injured so he gets forced off. It's not acceptable in my eyes. I think the only time that sort of criticism or being nasty to a player on social media, which by the way they're bound to see and read, is only ever really acceptable if you've got a very toxic sort of player in the club who is causing issue and is out of the team because of, you know, what they're doing. And we've had past experiences of that in the club. A name that I'm thinking of who is also a central midfielder that Owen will hopefully remember is Justin Walker. There was a period where, you know, he was, you know, quite sort of active in sort of bringing negativity to the club. And I think that kind of example is probably only where you could ever be that harsh on a player. In 2021, it's not on, especially if we're a club that's been praised for our sort of work around things like mental health. I think poor Liam O'Neill still has that monkey on his back from the fact that he's a Sean Derry signing, signed for like on a long-term deal, wasn't it? Like 3.5 years or something mental. Rumour was it was on big wage. And that mud has stuck, really, hasn't it? And he's never been able to shake that off, even though in the summer that's just gone, it's pretty widely accepted that he stayed on with like a reduced terms. Like, we don't know that for fact, but we can make a safe assumption that he probably took a pay cut to stay with us. So yeah, it's tough. Like, he is sort of stuck with that stigma, and it's not fair. And yeah, I'm glad that he bounced back yesterday and had a pretty strong half, because I think Drysdale deserves a lot of credit for how he performed in those couple of games where he was playing in midfield. But it was obvious to me that he was a defender playing in midfield, and there was limitations with his game. And you didn't see that yesterday with Liam O'Neill. He seemed a lot more natural in how he was sort of playing us forward and passing us and getting us moving up the pitch. And I think it's good to, yeah, it's good that we had that back. And like Tom says, I trust Mark Bonner. You know what? We're like top of the league. We've got 52 points or whatever it is, more points than we've had over most seasons back in the Football League. If he says I'm going to start Liam O'Neill, I trust his decision. So yeah, I think it's fair that he played yesterday. If you talk about, you know, who you would start as your strongest midfield, I don't think he makes that cut. But we'll move on to that in a bit.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It's, I think, you know, he had that stigma as well of when he was announced. You know, the tweet going out from the club was like, returning hero coming back. Everyone was like, oh, it's Quezzy. And it's like Liam O'Neill, who, you know, no one really knew at the time. You know, he left here when he was 10 years old. I think part of his problem is he's just not a glamorous footballer, is he? He puts in a shift every game. You know, I don't think anyone can doubt his commitment. He puts in a shift. He does the work that's needed. But I was going to say, like, he's not the kind of player to, you know, score worldy goals or, you know, create loads of goals. But he did yesterday. He created a great chance yesterday. A lovely assist. So yeah, that's kind of made that look a bit silly. But you know, he just gets on with things. And I guess a little bit like Greg in a way. You know, they're just solid players. They don't put in these kind of swashbuckling runs like Noyle does. You know, they don't put in these massive tackles like Drysdale does. And you know, he's just a decent League Two footballer. And yeah, exactly like you said there, we're top of the league. Like, you shouldn't be digging out our players on social media when we're top of the league. Like, save that for when we're getting thumped every week. Save that for Justin Walker. Find him, give him some stick. He deserves it.
Yeah, let's use that energy in the right way, shall we? No, I think I want to just sort of add to what I said before, because I think a lot of sort of what I said was just, you know, like, and it's absolutely correct that, like, you shouldn't be giving that sort of, you know, abuse to players on online. I mean, in terms of the sort of nature of what they were saying, you know, criticising or having an opinion, whatever, like, you're entitled to it, like I said. But I think the other part is, like, in terms of, like, pure merit, like, it's just not deserved. Like, it's just incorrect to say that, like, him starting is like a massive hindrance on the team. Like, it's obviously not. Like, he's obviously, like, very, very easy, like, a good enough football player for this level. Like, I don't know. It's, you know, we're obviously, I guess, kind of picking a negative out of, you know, kind of what was an undoubtedly very positive day for us. But I just think that I don't know. Yeah. Well, look, he'll probably play again on Tuesday. I think he's earned his place in the team. And yeah, we'll kind of move on from there. But, I'd just like to see a bit more balance to the discussion around him, to be honest.
Yeah, certainly an interesting one, and good to see him back in a Cambridge shirt and proving all the haters wrong. Jordan referenced about Cambridge United's best midfield selection if everyone's fit, and Joe added a question to his defensive question about that. So with Hiram Boateng potentially on his way back, and then, of course, the relative wealth of option we've got for you guys, who is the best and first picks for midfield? Owen, starting with you.
For central midfield, I mean, first pick for midfield, Sulahan, definitely. Central midfield, I don't know, it's really difficult. Like, you know, Digby brings a hell of a lot to the team. He really does, and is probably first name on the team sheet when he's fit. Boateng was absolutely superb, absolutely a class above in his first spell here, but before he got injured. So again, you know, for me, Boateng and Digby, yeah. We just spoke a lot about Liam O'Neill. He brings something to the team. He brings a calmness, a composure. You know, yeah, he's not the most attacking-minded player, but he doesn't make a huge amount of mistakes. And the other one, Adam May, who is maybe one of our more underrated players. I've been a little harsh on Adam May in the past, but certainly since the new year, he has kind of really stepped up a bit. And whether that's, you know, maybe he's just one of those players that needs, you know, the shadow of another player hanging over him, ready to take his place. Maybe that's what drives him on. You know, what kind of, yeah, makes him kick into gear. I don't know, but, you know, he scores goals, Adam May. He doesn't really make them, but he's always involved. He always seems to be involved. So yeah, it'd be harsh to drop him because he's not really done anything wrong. He's not brilliant. He's not amazing. He's another Liam O'Neill. He's a kind of solid, quiet player, I think. So yeah, I mean, for me in my central midfield too, probably Digby and Boateng, I think, with Houlihan, I guess, above, and yeah, I guess Hannah in there somewhere. I guess we'll talk about him in a bit because he's been a little bit off the boil lately, but still brings something to the team that no one else really does. You know, his attacking instincts are great. He links up with Houlihan really well. You know, moves the ball forward in a way that the others don't. It's, yeah, I guess that would be my preferred four, I think.
Yeah, I'm not far off disagreeing with you there, Owen. I guess to answer Joe's question, like, what's the preferred midfield options? I guess it depends on what formation that Bonner goes with. If you stick with the diamond, obviously Wesley at 10, I would probably, well, no, not probably, I would definitely go with Digby at the base of the diamond if he's fit. And when Boateng's fit, he's got a start. He's possibly the best midfielder in the league, so he starts. So you've got three of your four sides of the diamond right there with no question. And then, yeah, the real sort of stumbling block is, you know, who do you put on that other side of the diamond? And it's, yeah, it's a, I guess it's a three-way kind of sort of discussion now, isn't it? Because O'Neill could step into that role. Hannah and May are the other options. So, yeah, I'm not 100% sure who I would go with. I think I would probably go Hannon above May just because he has the ability to carry the ball better and links, you know, runs with the ball. And we, you know, like Owen was sort of saying, we don't really have that other option. You know, we don't have that option available elsewhere in our central midfielders. So I think if we stick with the diamond, I would go with Hannon. If Bonner decides that he wants to revert back to that sort of flatter four-man midfield where you have Wes and another on your wings that are tucking in, I probably would stick with Hannon in that formation as well because I think he's more adapt to it than May is. But I think that's harsh on May, and I wonder if Adam May has a role to play on Tuesday night when we play Cheltenham, and if Wesley's not going to be fit.
Yeah, I think on the midfield, the good and sort of reassuring thing is that, you know, we can obviously look on paper and decide about who our sort of first choice 11 would be. But the good thing is that I was a little bit worried about sort of maybe at the beginning of the year, for example, was that we'd be in a situation where we were having to like rush Boateng back, like, you know, if Digby's injured, like rushing him back. And I think what we've seen is that, you know, in terms of the players that we have available to us right now, like, you could also make the question, you know, we were also talking about O'Neill before the game and about the defenders as well. Like, the shirts are theirs to lose at the moment. It almost seems harsh to, like, you know, say to Hannon, say to May, you know, say to, you know, potentially O'Neill or Drysdale, whoever has that sort of sitting role. You know, you're getting dropped just because this guy's fit again. Let's not forget, like, Boateng's not played for us for probably more than 2 months now. And we've obviously, you know, one or two sort of very poor performances in there, but by and large, we've still been very good. So I think at the moment, like, it's obviously a little bit cliche, and it's probably I'm sitting on the fence massively here, but don't change a winning team just yet. And let's want to see how it goes. And the way that they controlled things at Mansfield was, to me, an indication that they're good enough to compete with anybody, really. And you know, the way that I think we saw flashes of what Hannon can do. I think he's maybe been off the ball for a little while, but you know, he obviously set up the move that led to the first goal at Mansfield, which was a really kind of quick counter attack. You know, something that we've always become sort of renowned for, I guess, in a way. You know, so many of our goals seem to come from little quick changes of interplays, and suddenly you end up with a cross into the box. And someone that, I mean, I guess you could make an argument that maybe is a midfielder, is that it was so good to have Dunk back in at Mansfield as well. I feel like we really missed him at Southend, and obviously he put in the cross for Mullin for his first goal. You know, kind of right on in the right place at the right time, as he's been so many times this season already. But I think the one that, you know, has also been grabbing the headlines recently is Houlihan, and he's probably the only one that does have a bit of a divine right to stay there regardless, because I don't think, you know, obviously Mullin scored the goals at Mansfield, but I thought he was, particularly in the second half, like just so important in pretty much everything we did, like almost set up Nibs that third goal out of absolutely nothing. And you know, you go back to his performance against Crawley, like it's almost at the point where the Wes now, where it's gone past the point where you know you've got a player who's like far too good for this level. It's actually just quite funny because he's just like so much better than what other teams have, and sort of what they can, they just can't cope with him. Like, they just can't cope with him. And obviously, again, he obviously links the midfield very nicely to the strikers, and obviously it's good to see that, you know, Paul Mullins obviously stayed on the goal trail. I thought obviously his first goal was just a case of being in the right place at the right time, and it, you know, probably wasn't the cleanest connection that he'll ever make with a football for his first goal at Mansfield. But the second one was just, it was the finish that you would only ever make if you were in the sort of form that he's been in this season. So clinical. It probably wasn't even really a half chance because of the angle. And he basically put it in the only place where it could have found the net. Brilliant. Just so good to see. And, you know, I think he mentioned in sort of an interview just after the game, like, talking about, you know, the record of David Crown. So that's very, very, very much in his sights. He'll probably be looking to break that. Certainly during March, maybe you know, kind of before the end of February. But yeah, obviously a bit of a meander from talking about the midfield, but I think at the moment, you know, it's important that we look at games like Mansfield and we're not tempted to just chuck Boateng and chuck DP back in just because they're fit again. And yeah, it's good not to be relying on it too much.
I kind of thought that Mullin had fluffed that first goal. I saw him sort of connect with it, and it seemed to sort of go into the ground and quite slow. I was like, that's not going in. But it went in purely because of the work that Dunk did. And I'm glad Tom sort of mentioned him just then, because I thought the fullbacks yesterday against Mansfield were the real difference. Noyle was class again. He's just a player that I feel like I can trust him in every part of the pitch. If Noyle's there, I trust him to get it right and do the right thing. And Mansfield couldn't deal with him. Dunk, you know, we talked about Greg Taylor being on sort of the form of his life, but Dunk's not far behind in his form. And yeah, the running and the cross for the goal, it was that good. It meant that Mullin could sort of fluff his connection a little bit and it would still go in. So that was a big takeaway yesterday, that it seemed to me that we'd sort of mapped out and planned how we were going to sort of get on top of a tired Mansfield team. And that was by using width and using our fullbacks. And I think it comes down to, you know, like I was saying at the start, like having that extra rest time during the week with not having a midweek game and being able to spend more time on the training pitch, practicing those sort of things. And yeah, you know, Mullin will get the headlines from yesterday for the goals and edging closer to Crown's record. But for me, the standout performers, you know, were Wes, the fullbacks, and big Joey Ironside up top, who was unbelievable.
It was just a complete team performance yesterday, wasn't it? I think we've said this a couple of times already this season, but when everyone's firing, in our team. We're just unstoppable. Like we never looked like losing yesterday, even in the first half. We didn't get the breaks really. You know, Wes was quite unlucky with his shot, but you know he still had two players in front of him there. You know, and it was at a tight angle. It was a tough ball. Like you know, not many people would have put it away. Mullin probably would have because you know he's incredible. But it's just you know there's not even anyone you can look at yesterday and think, you know what, they weren't at the races. They didn't have a good game. Like you know, even Hannan. You know, we spoke about him. He's been off the boil a little bit this season. Also not this season, but like these past few games. He was great yesterday. He was brilliant yesterday. Dunk battered his man all day long. Ironside battered everybody all day long. It was just a complete performance. And, you know, Bonner's got this team so well drilled that they know what they got to do. And even if things don't necessarily go their way in the first half, you know, they know that they're going to... I think Bonner even said in his kind of post-match comments that, you know, they were happy to go in at the break 0-0. And, you know, and then as long as they won the second half, it'd be okay. So, you know, that's exactly what we did as well. You know, and it's just great to see a manager that talks like that, that knows exactly what he wants this team to achieve and how they're going to achieve it, rather than you look at some of the decisions previous managers have made, they've been a little bit panicky in that, you know, I'll throw him in there or him in there. And maybe we saw a little bit of that earlier in the season when we were kind of shoehorning Greg into the midfield, which isn't his natural position. But I just think everyone in that team is exactly there on merit, exactly knows what they're doing, and is doing it to the best of their ability. And Boateng when he's fit, Digby when he's fit, they'll get chances just purely because, you know, the next, I think, 3 weeks, we're doing Saturday, Tuesday again. You know, chances will come. You know, these players aren't machines. They're gonna, you know, they're gonna tire a bit. And you know, certainly, you look at the work rate these midfielders are doing. It's great, but we've got three more options. You know, in O'Neill, Digby, and Boateng to come back in. And that's before we even mentioned Shiloh Tracy, who we've not even mentioned at all this pod, but has looked so lively when he's come on. Like, okay, you know, I don't think he's the complete footballer, and you know he maybe doesn't do the defensive work that Hannan does. So you know I don't know if he's going to be a starter over him, but you know he's looked great. You know, at Crawley he was straight on, straight involved, and when we've seen him since, he's still looked like quite a player. So yeah, I just wanted to mention him because you know he's everyone's made a contribution to this team, and you know when we get promoted at the end of the season, you know, all those performances count.
Yeah, I think obviously bang on our end, to be fair, and I think the next few weeks and sort of months will obviously show what an important addition that sort of right winger will be. But you know, we do it on obviously quite a lot of the pods that we do, and it's only natural given how well things are going that, you know, you pick out Mullin, you pick out Houlihan, you pick out Noyle, you pick out Ironside, you pick out, you know, Duncan, and obviously the centre backs, but for obviously individual praise. And that's absolutely right that we do that, because, you know, they've obviously performed to such a high level, especially sort of Mullin, Houlihan and Noyle, you probably say. But maybe what we haven't done so far is just is really, you know, done it in bits, but maybe not specifically in terms of how well Bonner's done, just and what an absolutely like remarkable job he's doing. What was it? Probably just over a year ago that he sort of took over as caretaker, and you've only got to, you know, look back at the results to know what an absolute mess he inherited, and to essentially weed out the crap in the summer that he did, and, you know, play such a big role in building a team like this, and to manage it in the way that he is, that we can go to Mansfield and be absolutely confident that we can go and get a result there to keep us top of the league. Obviously got manager of the month for January, which is rightly so. You know, we did really well, but throughout the year and obviously yesterday's no different. Any sort of challenge, any sort of setback that we've had, he's managed it, I'd say, pretty much perfectly. Yeah, I think it's just important we obviously definitely single him out for praise, because I think it's easy to get lost in obviously discussion about some of the top performers in the team, which is, like I say, it only might be two, but yeah, Bonner's doing an absolutely cracking job as well. And again, you know, I mentioned about Liam O'Neill and his connection to the club earlier. It's so good to see, almost to the point where with this team, I'd almost rather watch these guys be like outside the playoffs and sort of battling to get in than I would see the team of sort of last season, like the Richards, the Wards, or them sort of doing well, because Bonner's obviously like homegrown manager. He's worked so hard to get into the position that he's in, and now he's got it. He's absolutely nailing it. And there's a lot of players in that team who I just love having at Cambridge United, and it's such a good position to be in. And yeah, long may it continue.
This positivity is, pretty rare on the podcast.
But having said that, I did think we gave a lot of chances away against Mansfield, and that's the only thing that I'll say is negative on the squad.
Right, coming up in the second part of Under the Abbey Stand, we're going to look at Cambridge United's tricky next few games and take the rest of your questions. Coming up on Tuesday night at the Abbey is probably one of the defining games of the season, a huge game for Cambridge, welcoming Cheltenham. Jordan, how important is this, and how do you see this game going?
This is the ultimate definition of a top of the table six-pointer, isn't it? I was thinking about this pre-pod, and I'm trying to remember the last time we were involved in a game of such scale where like the result was such a big one. At either end of the table, you know, at the top end of the table, it's certainly been a long, long time. Cheltenham got two games to catch up with us, and I think they're 5 points behind. You know, if we get a draw or a win, that really put so much pressure on them to have to go and get results in their games in hand. Absolute huge six pointer. And I can't wait. I think I'm going to be a real wreck on Tuesday night in anticipation for it. How do we think it goes? That's a tough one, because obviously they are a little bit more rested than we are. I think we've played more games. However, they have just come off a defeat. I think they got beat 2-0 yesterday by Bradford. So it's not a straightforward one, is it? My biggest fear is it's a Tuesday night, and that probably means that there will be no Wes Houlihan. So it's how do we react without Wes? The Salford result from a few weeks ago fills me a little bit with the dread. You know, that was a Tuesday night, difficult pitch, didn't have Wes. The players are obviously tired. I guess the one big difference between the Salford game is that Salford were very well rested, and you could see that in how they, you know, pressed us in the first half and forced us into those mistakes, whereas Cheltenham won't be as rested, so it will make it more competitive. I can't call it. I really can't call a result for Tuesday night. I don't know if anyone else is going to be brave enough to stick their head on the block and say we'll lose, we'll win, or we'll draw, but I can't call it. But I really, I don't know. I back us to get the job done, even if we are minus a Wesley. You know, we've played and we've won on Tuesday nights without him.
I think we'll win. I think we'll do it. I don't know why. I just think when we're playing well, when we're flying, We're unbeatable, I think. This is going to come back and haunt me now, isn't it?
This is ballsy. This is a really ballsy prediction, Owen.
I've put my head above the parapet now, so I've got to stick with it. I don't know. I just think when you look at how we played it against Mansfield, you know, when you look at how we played against Crawley and Barrow earlier, all difficult games, all difficult pitches. The Abbey pitch isn't great. We're a good side. Cheltenham haven't beaten us. They didn't beat us earlier in the season. Why not? Why can't we win?
I think this is one of those games where like my only concern is the fact that Houlihan might not play, but I just wonder whether they might, and I guess it's kind of all about him like sort of managing his own body, which I guess Bonner probably trusts him to do by now, but like I wonder whether they might start getting tempted to go, let's just like push him through. Because, like, I've said before, I think we're, you know, fortunate that we're in a position where we, you know, we're not absolutely reliant on one player or sort of another player at all. There's a lot of them sort of come in and do a job, but I do think we suffer without him there. And we've not got that many Tuesday night games left, thankfully, but that's one area where I think that's a big decision for Bonner to make now. Is it maybe the sort of time of the season where, you know, especially in these sort of big crunch games, we've seen how it went at Salford, and you know, it's not all because Houlihan wasn't there, but I just wonder if he might sort of push him through. I think it's definitely a hard one to read and it's a hard one to call. But I think we've just got to start backing ourselves. We're top on merit. We're not there by accident. You know, Cheltenham aren't, you know, they're a good football team. Of course they are. You know, they didn't beat us at their place, but they very, very nearly did. Let's not forget, you know, albeit a sort of, was it 96th minute Paul Ballard equaliser. So it's definitely a tough game. And I think it's something Jordan mentioned. I can't remember if you mentioned it sort of just what you were saying there or whether it's sort of off record, but one of the big and sort of interesting things that will come from this result is that if we can win, it does put so much pressure on those games in hand. And, you know, I've said before that obviously Cheltenham have got, I've said before, and again, it's an easy thing to sit here and say when you are top of the league, but I'd much rather have points to the games in hand, you know, especially this season more than any. But if we can, you know, beat these teams and essentially get ourselves to a position where even if all the teams below us won their games in hand, which, by the way, it's literally impossible that they will because they'll play against each other at some point, that we're still sort of above them on sort of points. Because I guess that's the only thing that when you look at the table jumps out at you immediately. And Cheltenham are one of those teams that, as much as we'll be happy with our own position, they'll definitely back themselves that they'll be able to get enough points for their games to maybe not overtake us, but certainly get up our backside, so to speak. So it's definitely a big game, but it's one that I think with Houlihan playing, we can go and win. And I look at it as a, you know, pretty winnable fixture. I'm less concerned about this game than I was about Salford, for example. Without him, it'll be a struggle. But having said that, I'm not sure if he played at their place. I haven't actually looked at the team, and you know, we obviously didn't lose that game either.
He did, I think. I remember his celebration when Mullin scored. I think that was, I looked it up, he's played in four of our Tuesday night games, and I think we've played about 15 midweek games. It's mental how many we played, but that was one of the ones that he played in. I think you're right. On our day, we can compete with anyone in the league, and my worry is that Tuesday night might be too early for Digby. Boateng's not likely to be back. And if you also say that Wesley doesn't play or doesn't start, like, who is that natural replacement for Wes at the top of the diamond? Is he going to maybe change the formation and go with a more flat sort of midfield four and maybe bring Tracy in? But again, Tracy wasn't in the squad for Mansfield. Like, so is he going to be fit for Tuesday night? So my only apprehension about going into the Cheltenham game is, you know, the fitness and then the bodies that we're going to have sort of available to us. But it would be a massive statement if we went out and won, and there's no reason why we couldn't do that. But it's interesting. It's interesting that we've all picked up on Wes and whether he'll play and will he play over the next 3 weeks where we've got Tuesday night games. I also think that, you know, if we go and beat Cheltenham on Tuesday night without Wes, like, for the mentality of the squad, like, what a rush that would be. Like, what a confidence booster that would be, that we've managed to win without Wesley. Like, and I wonder if there is someone who sat there willing to step up and be like, you know what, I'll be that difference maker. And yeah, could be huge, not just in terms of points and how the table looks, but mentality wise it could be huge if we get a positive result on Tuesday night.
Definitely. He's certainly going to be a tight one, and one that Cambridge United would love to bring 3 points back from. Following that, Cambridge United travel to Port Vale on the last Saturday in February. Port Vale out of form and low down the league, but no guarantee of a victory there. And then two home games Tuesday and Saturday against Scunthorpe and Walsall. So we spoke in the break about a tricky month or so coming up, but some real chance to put points on the board as you said, Tom, you'd rather have points than games in hand. And if we can maintain getting a couple of points out of the tough games and then beating the teams we should, surely Cambridge are going to be in a really enviable position come mid-March.
Yeah, certainly. I just had a bit of an epiphany there. I know that March obviously looks really difficult on paper, but I've also just had a really positive thought that if we have a really good March, we're basically there. So, I mean, like, if we go and beat all of these teams and then you know, we come to April, it's almost like pretty much not the first game of April. It's like in your hands. It's like you need X amount of points now to do it.
We've got a difficult April, eh?
Got a difficult March. It's a difficult league, man. Look how tight it is. Like, the points difference between Cheltenham in third and, you know, teams down in like ninth and tenth, it's like only 6 points difference. And then you've got other teams that aren't in the top 10 at the moment who are picking up form. You know, your Bradfords and your Boltons, who are kind of sort of, I don't want to say waking giants and like brush their ego, but they are big clubs that were expected to do well and haven't so far, but are picking up form. And, you know, we were saying off air that actually as difficult as March and April is, because you play the likes of Forest Green and Carlisle and Tranmere, like teams in and around that top six, I'm almost more apprehensive of playing those form teams, those teams like Scunthorpe and Bolton and Bradford that have really started to pick up momentum, the kind of teams that you don't want to be paired with in the playoffs. Having said that, Mansfield were a form team and we put one over them. So hopefully, you know, we can follow suit. But, you know, Tom talked about at the end of part one, like the praise that Bonner deserves for how his, you know, for his performance this season. The period that saw him pick up manager of the month for January, I think we were averaging like over 2 points a game. If we can get close to that again, it's like Tom was saying, like we're almost there, like it's in our hands. And there's no reason to think that we should change the mentality of, oh, we need to sort of, you know, squeak results here and there. Like we've got, you know, we've got form, we've got, you know, we've got the players, we've got players to come back like Digby and Boateng, who, you know, are hugely influential. And we've also got, you know, after this like 3 week period of midweek games, we have got the favorable run in. Like we might play tougher teams, but we've got bigger gaps between those games. And I think that will ultimately account for a few points when it comes to sort of, you know, April time when everyone's having to play all their games in hand.
I'd like to think that after Cheltenham, the next kind of three games after that, I'd like to think they're all winnable. Port Vale away, okay, it's never an easy place to go, but, you know, we beat them quite comprehensively earlier in the season. They're not doing very well. Scunthorpe, Walsall, both at home. There's no reason we can't win those. Really, it's when we get to Bolton, Forest Green, Carlisle. That's when it starts to get difficult. That's when I think it's squeaky bum time, isn't it? As Alex Ferguson calls it. It's
certainly interesting to see who rears their ugly head in putting Cambridge's good form to bed. But it'll be interesting to see who. Fuck that. I just fucked that up completely. Sorry, my phone just rang.
I said Boldham, mate. So
Boldham. I know. We got past Boldham, for fuck's sake.
We do that whole thing again?
No, we're keeping
Boldham's Boldham. Like, that's like a fake place that you come up with if you're going to set like a crime drama in the Northwest. And it's just like, it's like combine the two most like Lancashire places ever. Just fucking, yeah.
Anyone else notice that Oldham score a lot of goals, by the way? If you look at the table, they have scored more than us.
Yeah.
I think they're like the only team that have scored more.
And they beat us already as well.
Yeah.
No, sorry, Exeter have scored more and Oldham are one behind us.
There's only four teams that can double us this year? Oldham, Exeter, Forest Green and someone shy, I can't remember who, but
yeah. Oldham?
Stevenage?
No, Stevenage withdrew, didn't we? I can't remember.
No, didn't we? We lost to Stevenage away. Have we played them at home? I thought they were towards the end of the season.
Yeah, right, it's Stevenage. Yeah. So, yeah, Stevenage, Oldham, Forest Green, Exeter.
Imagine if we lose back to back Stevenage and Grimsby and it fucks up our automatic place.
Oh, Jesus Christ. The most Cambridge United thing imaginable.
I'm gonna go back in and just like loop it round to bring in the where do you realistically think we'll finish question, because it puts you on the spot a bit.
Yeah.
Everyone, not just Owen. Very interesting to see if Cambridge United can maintain this form and, give us a bit of something to be excited about in March. We've had a great question from Mark Sauter. Where do you realistically think we'll finish? It's a tough one, but we masquerade as knowing what we're talking about. So, Owen, what do you think come the end of the season? Where are we going to be?
You've already had one bold prediction from me with regard to Cheltenham. So, realistically, I can't see us finishing top. I'd love us to.
Oh, Owen.
If we beat Fulham, maybe we will. Second or third.
I don't know.
We'll know a lot more after Cheltenham. We'll know a hell of a lot more after Forest Green. Second or third. I don't know. I'd love us to be top. You know, we always go up as bloody second, don't we? Against bloody Brentford, against bloody Luton in the Conference. It's like, yeah, let's win it for a change, but I can't see it happening.
Firstly, that's an incredible angle for a negative. We're really trying to shoehorn them in now. We only get promoted when we finish second. Oh, that's true. I really thought you were going to go all guns blazing now. He said, you already have one bold prediction from me. I thought we were going to go, yeah, we're going to win the league. That'd be brilliant. I'd probably say similar to Owen, to be fair. I'd say top three. That's got to be the aim. The sort of the target now has to be building that gap between us and fourth. And I'd love us to win the league, but you know, realistically, I think the difference between us finishing first and third is kind of minimal. But yeah, I think certainly top three is firstly very realistic and has to be the sort of ambition there.
For me, I would say I'm confident that we'll finish top seven minimum, and I'm fairly confident that we'll finish in the top three. I think that we've proven so far this season that we're good enough to just keep plugging away and picking up points. And we should be in with a good shout for automatic promotion. Like on our day, we can compete with anyone. Yeah, that the issue is we've got this small squad and the injuries could throw us off. But we've done pretty well recently to cope without, you know, Digby and Boateng. So hopefully that's enough to see us sort of to get over the line. I think the Salford result kind of, I don't know, it kind of sort of, I wasn't too disappointed when we lost to Salford, even though it was quite a heavy defeat, but it kind of just sort of reiterated the point to me that we're not going to be a team that wins the league with 100 points and 100 goals. It's going to be far closer and more competitive than that. And I don't know, I don't really care. Like, I don't care if we win the title or if we go up via you know, goal difference in third position. Like, I just want it to happen. I just want us to get across the line, because there's so many like brilliant little stories around our club this season. You know, the way that we've been run and the football that we've played, the players we've brought in, but then all these other bigger stories off the pitch, you know, work in the community, mental health, getting people into the stadiums. There's so many like brilliant little narratives going through this season that for me, if we don't get across the line, and this can sound really controversial, it would kind of put a real downer on the season. Like I know a lot of people would say, do you know what, if we finish top seven and we don't go up in the playoffs, it doesn't matter because we've had a really great season and look at how far we've come and how far we've turned it around. And I get that. And I get that perhaps I'm being a little bit unreasonable with this, but I don't want to be the valiant loser. I want us to get across the line, and I don't care if it's by a whisper or what. We just need to, you know, we just need to like make sure that this brilliant story that we've put together this season ends in the right way. And yeah, so I'm confident that we will be top seven. I've got a sneaky feeling it'll be top three. And I don't care too much about the title. Forest Green can have it as long as we get across the line. That's all I care about.
emotional stuff there from Jordan Morland, speaking from a fan who's been burnt many times by Cambridge United, I feel. And thank you for all your questions for putting in. At Abbey Stand Pod is where you can get us your questions. We had a really good question coming in from Scott as well. If we do win promotion this season, who would rank higher for you in legendary status in terms of achievement? Would it be Richard Money or would it be Mark Bonner? It's a tough one to answer, but again, I'm going to put you all on the spot. Tom, you look primed and ready to give me an answer.
I've had a little while to think about this, and I think I've come to an opinion. I think in terms of the sort of status within sort of club folklore, the conference lot will probably, in terms of the importance of what they did and what was riding on that season, they're probably in the question, maybe other than the sort of team of the sort of early 90s, and those guys obviously achieved in terms of actual sort of, you know, the quality of what they did, such remarkable things. That probably goes down as maybe the most important and sort of legendary season of obviously the club's history, potentially. But I think this year would be a lot more enjoyable. I think going up this year, I would enjoy it a lot more. I think the downside of us not going up in the conference was so big and so catastrophic. Like, if we didn't do it, that I'm not saying, you know, you know, Wembley's obviously one of the best days out that we've obviously ever had as a football club. But it did kind of make it very difficult to kind of enjoy. I felt, especially in terms of the playoffs, just like the pressure of it was so immense that it was like, let's just like get the job done. Whereas now, you know, like look forward to your Saturdays. Like the downside of obviously not going up is that we'll just have another crack at it next year, essentially. But I feel like this is more of like a hallmark promotion team, if that makes sense. I think there was a lot of things in that conference team that were obviously brilliant, but like, we didn't have a striker who scored 20 plus goals. You know, we struggled with like goalkeepers throughout that season, I seem to remember. We didn't have, like, you know, we had players like Berry and Champion, obviously performed very well, but we've now got an absolute like talisman and Houlihan, who's like got probably legendary status in the Football League. This team, I think, would be more enjoyable to watch get promoted, but I don't think it's as important. And that's basically as much of an opinion that I can come to while still sitting on the fence as I can do. So that's what I'm going to go with.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because we were kind of sort of sat on the kind of, I don't know, on the kind of sort of cliff of kind of being irrelevant. You know, if we didn't go up under Money, it would have been what, 10 years in non-league, like 10 years not as a Football League club. Like, that's quite a status. So yeah, that adds that sort of extra something to that promotion. Plus, obviously, having been there or being so close twice before whilst in the conference kind of adds to it as well. I think for me personally, I feel a little bit uneasy saying someone is more of a legend than another person if they've both achieved like great success with the club in terms of promotion. And I feel like both should be remembered and celebrated. I think with Money, obviously we won a knockout tournament, which we'd never done before, as well as got promoted. Then there was the whole cup run and the Man United experience, and yeah, and there's all those great things. But if I'm honest, for me, I would say if we win promotion this year, it would be the bigger achievement. I think we were a biggish team in the conference and we had a budget to match that. We had the appeal of coming and playing for us and joining us, whereas we don't have any of that this season. We've got a tiny budget, and then you add in the complications of playing a season during a pandemic and that budget becoming even smaller with no fans and everything else. And then if you throw into consideration all the fallout from playing in a pandemic and the impact it has on training and just the running of the club and how different it must be, I think getting promoted this year would probably be the bigger achievement of the two. But even if we don't win promotion, I would argue that Bonner is very, very close to being categorised as a legend anyway. You know, the whole fact that there's this story of a fan working his way up through the club, guiding us through the most tumultuous period for the football since the First and Second World Wars. He was instrumental in making our academy as respected as it is. You know, he's kind of, you know, played attractive football on the pitch. He's brought fans together. you know, I feel like even if we don't get promoted, he's basically there with legendary status. Having said that, I would put a statue of Paul Mullin up first.
I loved this question. I thought this was a fantastic question. It really got me thinking quite a lot. And I'm gonna disagree with you, Jordan. I think it doesn't happen often, other than our respective views on Andy Dallas, of course. But I think it's really difficult to discuss Bonner's legacy while he's still creating it. We don't know what's going to happen next season or you know another season. Under Bonner, he's been fantastic this season. I don't want to criticize him because I'd love to see him go on and become another John Beck. But you know, John Beck's a man whose legacy was a little tainted by his second managerial spell. It was toxic, wasn't it? At the end of Beck's second spell, it was like nothing I'd ever experienced at the Abbey. You know, Shaggy as well. You know, absolute legend on the pitch. As a manager, okay, he'll be first to admit he was a bit out of his depth, but you know he took us down. He's a club legend, but he got us relegated, okay, via a nice day out in Cardiff. So I'm a little bit loath to kind of build a statue of Bonner already. Let's see next season. I think I've got full confidence in the man. I think he will go down as a club legend. I think he will. I think you know he's building something really good here. My worry is that someone comes in, you know, a team at the bottom end of a championship or, you know, top end of League 2, like an Ipswich, sorry, League 1, like an Ipswich or someone like that, and kind of snaps him up and doubles his money, and we lose him before he has a chance to really cement his legacy. Get him promoted will make him a legend. Anyway, you know, it made McFarland a legend. It made Beck a legend. It made Ron Atkinson a legend before that. Richard Money, on the other hand, you know, it's funny what you say. Like the conference, we were, you know, the second biggest team in the conference that year. We you know, absolutely deserved to finish second. We were second best team in the conference that year. You know, we were never going to catch Luton once they got going with the money. You know, we always finished second. it's a really difficult league to get out of. It's you know it's so hard to get out of, and you know we had two playoff experiences before that, when we probably were the better team, you know we were probably one of the better teams in the conference that year and lost to Exeter, to Torquay, and you know what they were going, that was going, it was really devastating. I can take losing to Exeter from Torquay, but if we'd have lost to Gateshead, you know, they play in a fucking athletic stadium. Like, they're not even a proper football team, are they? You know, like you said, I think you said it, Tom, like, we would have just been irrelevant. Like, you know, you're irrelevant in the conference. No one gives a fuck about you. You don't get any coverage in the press. TV don't care about you. You know, we're a Football League club now. We're in the top 92 teams in the country, which is our, you know, it's our rightful place. We've had many seasons at second division level, you know, more so than Peterborough have ever had. You know, we're a big team. We deserve to be up there. You know, we deserve to be talked about and have newspapers interested in us rather than just, you know, look at this team and in the conference. I think, you know, if we hadn't have gone up that season, would we still be here now? I don't know. You know, we wouldn't have had the Man United game. You know, the National League is a absolute basket case at the moment, isn't it? You know, from calling off the North and South National League and leaving the Conference Premier as it was known running. I don't know, man, I don't know if we'd still be here as a team if money hadn't got us promoted. So for me, whatever came after that first season in the league had its ups and downs. From you know, the Plymouth game was absolutely superb, first game of the season there with Josh Bowen scoring the winner. The Man United games were, you know, everyone will remember, but you know, it did go a little bit sour towards the end of Money's run. But for me, he'll always be a legend, and getting us out of the conference that season, especially the manner in which we did it as well. You know, we always make things hard for us in the playoffs, don't we? Like, you know, even in the first two playoffs, you know, we beat Burton, I think, at their place, and then we had that incredible game with Stevenage. With Scott Rendell getting the winner in the last minute, you know, we were so close to going out of the playoffs in the semis twice then. And again at Halifax, you know, we lost the first time at Halifax and, you know, luckily St. Delano saved us. So, yeah, for me, money, legend, definitely. Bonner on his way to becoming a legend.
Very interesting stuff. And, yeah, thanks for that question. One of the best we've had. It makes a change from asking if someone's going to be staying with the club. But thank you for all of your questions, and we do appreciate them all. Sorry we can't answer every single one. It's at AbbeyStandPod to get in contact with us. I think that brings us towards the end of, like I said, a bumper pod. And when we talk next time and release the next pod, we could be even closer to glory. But who knows what's going to happen in the next 2 or 3 weeks. But Jordan Warren, thank you.
Cheers, everyone.
Tom Walker, thank you.
Pleasure, mate.
Thank you, Owen Keenan.
Cheers.